Hello, welcome to Back on the Ball with Colin Lee and Dean Edwards and me, David Fitzgerald. We're talking football today and we've got a great conversation coming up now. We're going to have to check this with our solicitors. Our thanks to Wallen's Solicitors for sponsoring this programme and also to Greenwood Accountants. We're going to mix managers and nights out, shall we say, events off the ball. Anyway, that's the end of this podcast. Tune in next week. Okay, great managers you've been serving or you have served under. Come on, Dino, who was your best?
The best manager I played under was Cyril Knowles. Oh, yeah. A million miles. He was a proper Yorkshire hard man. He was a psychologist as well. I mean, he used to do all kinds of things to players. I mean, yeah, Cyril was definitely one of the best. But, what, you know, we talked about in the last podcast about players that you've played with and played against. One of the best scenarios I had, and again, you don't want to meet your heroes. When I moved from Exeter to Torquay, Terry Cooper was my manager at Exeter. He just took over. And Cyril Knowles was the manager at Torquay United. So Terry's took over and decided that I wasn't for him. He'd only seen me play one game and I'd scored a hat-trick. But he decided I wasn't for him. So he was trying to walk me out to different teams and he was telling me that Wrexham wanted me and somebody. And when I rang them up, they go, oh, no, he's offered you to us and this and that. So basically, Cyril's coming for me. And we played Chelsea in a pre-season game. And after the game, I had to go into the office with a bowl for them. Now, I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, who am I? And you've got Cyril Knowles one side and Terry Cooper the other, who are both England. Growing up, 1970 World Cup, you're looking at the England fullbacks, and I'm thinking, right, they're having not an argument, but a debate over the money and whatever else. So it was going to be, I was going to get a 10 grand signing on fee.
Nice.
Yeah, I thought so at the time. So, yeah, I hadn't got to move too far. I bought an house in Exeter, and I was quite happy there, but obviously Torquay had come in for me, and the season before they'd done well. And Cyril said, right, okay, said all done. He said, we'll have you on a free transfer. We'll give you the money as a signing on fee. I said, okay, great. And I could see Terry's eyes, you know, his brain was whirring. And all of a sudden he said, hang on a minute. He said, I've just got to go out and see the chairman. And he came back and he said, right, he said, we want 6 grand for you, a fee. And I thought, that's embarrassing as it is. And I've said, well, why is that then? And he said, well, you're going to our nearest rivals. And the chairman said, if you go there and do well, it's going to be embarrassing for us. I said, so what are you getting rid of me for then? But he couldn't. And to that day, it rankled me. Mm. You know, it really did, because I thought it was unnecessary. You know, for that small amount of money, he didn't need to do that. And from then on, anything Terry Cooper said, I couldn't. And you know, I didn't want to listen to him. But Cyril was a totally different lad. He understood that level, as we were speaking again in another podcast. I mean, the first day I went there with him, he was they had a murder ball court, it was called, at Torquay. And it was like a 30, 40 foot by 40 foot tarmac with fencing by the side of the changing room. On a Friday before the game, he'd just throw a ball in and say, right, free for all. And, you know, somebody come out with stitches, or I lost my front teeth in there at one stage. One lad broke his foot. I mean, it was just chaos in there. But he knew how to, he made us into like a proper solid team. But they were all crazy. We were known as the Carlsberg Seven.
Other beers are available.
Yeah, yeah.
Other players aren't.
Yeah. Colin, you managers that really stick out?
I think I have to go back to my youth playing days initially.
Oh, yeah.
He's a really good friend of mine still now, Dave Merrington, who, for me, probably the greatest motivator of players I've ever worked with. And I say work with, I brought him into Walsall when I was the manager. And unfortunately, he wasn't able to stay as long as I wanted him to, but he just had something else, Dave. You know, the way that he, very, very professional, there was no grey areas. And his coaching, his way of getting through to players was unreal, absolutely phenomenal. And when you delve into his success, if you like, at youth level, Alan Shearer, the Wallace brothers, Letiziers, all these sort of players come to mind. At Bristol City, under his guidance, we got through to the FA Youth Cup final to play Ipswich Town in the final, and unfortunately lost 3-1 over two legs. But then they had Osmond, Butcher, Burley, loads of players who came through, Gates, all these sort of players who were top players. But so Dave Merrington, for me, was a massive inspiration to me, and had something that other managers didn't have, and that was the skill to manage and motivate players, which for me is top of the tree.
Yeah.
I then go into really success on the pitch, because success on the pitch, you generally look at the manager in charge at that time. I mean, Sir Geoff Hurst brought me into Chelsea. Wow. And he was a big, big inspiration to me. He was a similar type of player to me, a target man as such. And I learned a lot from him. He joined in training and was still an unbelievable player at that time. So Geoff, for certain reasons, really guided me into becoming the type of centre forward I evolved into. And then I have to come on to John Neil, who was a huge success at Chelsea. Initially, I didn't really get John Neil initially, to be quite honest. A very, very quiet man who just went about his business in a controlled manner, if you like. I've never, ever, during my period with John, he'd never exploded at halftime, never really lambasted the players, just dealt with situations very quietly. But he was a man, and I describe him as a man who, when he said something, it actually stuck and it meant something. And the success that he brought to Chelsea, the way that he changed the team from a good team, you know, with the likes of your Clive Walkers, your Mickey Fillerys and people like that, fantastic players. But for some reason, he filled the team with a team of winners, people who wanted to win. And out of the team with the Clive Walkers and such in it, there was only three players that remained at Chelsea, and thankfully I was one of them. So it was myself, Colin Pates and John Bumstead who stayed. And we had a similar winning mentality, if you like, and all the players that he brought in. The recruitment of players was fantastic. He was just an inspiration in a different way, who brought in the players into the team, and the team gelled and the team went on and won things. And he did it in his way, quiet, controlled. Everything he said made sense. When he said it, it stuck. So John Neil, for me, probably top of the tree.
Well, obviously, I can't talk about any manager apart from the people I work with, especially at Plymouth Argyle. I did love Luggy, Paul Sturrock.
Yes.
Great passion for the game. And Ian Holloway, there are no stories I can tell on this podcast.
I would imagine he was fun to be around.
There was one situation, it's just come to me. We had a linesman there who was deaf. Ollie, as ever, was screaming at the linesman for some offence that had just been penalised, and he thought it was wrong. I just said, Ollie, I think you'll find the gentleman is hard of hearing and he's got grommets, he can't hear you. And of course, Ollie is fluent in British Sign Language because of his own family.
Yeah.
And I don't know what he signed, but he was really quite offended.
Absolutely brilliant.
But wonderful. And he sort of walked past, adjusted his jacket. That told him.
There's only him who could do that.
Very funny. I remember that he turned up with a cold once, and the crowd were chanting, Ollie, Ollie, give us a cough. And he looked around the dugout and went... That's brilliant. Absolutely.
It's a shame he's not in the game still now, isn't it? I mean,
what a passion.
You know, when I went back to Exeter, Alan Ball was my manager as well.
Oh, right.
Rest in peace, Alan. He was a great lad as well. He was a character and still a good player as well. He was playing. But my other manager was Graham Turner. And, you know, there's certain managers who can manage at top levels, and there's certain managers who manage down the, you know, the lower leagues, first, third, fourth division, League One, League Two. Graham, I mean, when I first went there, he's the one who gave me my debut. I really looked up to him. He was my teammate as well. And then after about 4 years of being there, he decided to give me a free transfer and sent me to Finland. So obviously he sent me out the way. So when I'm at Wolves, Sammy Chapman was my first manager and he was just a character himself. And then Brian Little took over. Mm. And then the one day I just played with, I scored against Stockport and I was sitting on the treatment table. Brian Little came in to me and he went, we better get our coats. And I said, why is that? He said, Graham Turner's taking over. So Brian had fell out with Graham at Aston Villa, and Graham came in, and within a couple of games, he decided I weren't going to play for him. And I went and seen him, and I said, look, looks like history's repeating itself. He said, well, I'm just going to change players and the playing staff in here. And then he sent me out to Sligo on loan. And I thought, is he trying to get rid of me here? He sent me to Finland, he sent me to Sligo. And then I went from Wolves and I signed for Exeter. But I got my revenge on him because we played Wolves in the Sherpa Van area final. And we played down here. And you talk about man management. Cyril Knowles got Wolves to come down. They booked into one of the local hotels the night before we were playing. Cyril got the fire service to come down and waterlogged the pitch.
Oh, really?
He flooded the pitch. Obviously, Wolves have got to stay down another day now, so they've got to stop another night in the hotel. So they came down. It didn't actually work that night because we went 1-0 up and then Wolves scored 2 in the last 5 minutes. So then we have to go back to Molineux, and they haven't been beat for nearly 3 years at Molineux. And I don't think we've won away from home for 3 years. And we went and beat them 2-0. And it was crazy. But I got my revenge on him that day. And he said in his book, it was the worst feeling he's ever had in management. He felt sick to the pit of his stomach. And it was nice when you... I mean, you must have played against old clubs, Cole, when you went back and haunted them. I don't know whether you did or not, but it's a great feeling.
I missed the Chelsea-Tottenham game because I got sent off the game before. So that was a big disappointment.
You've been sent off?
Oh, a few times, Fitz, yeah. Two
Good
or three times.
Grief.
I can remember the sending off, actually, the game prior to the... I think it was the quarterfinal of the Cup. The ball was played into me on the halfway line. We were playing against Cardiff, and I flicked the ball around the centre-half, who was right up my backside, and went the other way, because it was right on the halfway line, and I would have been in. All of a sudden, he lunged at me, took half my sock off, ripped down the side of my leg. So my reaction was to turn and punch him straight in the jaw, which he replied with a punch at me, and we both walked off.
Oh.
And for me, that was probably the biggest disappointment, was not being able to play against Spurs for Chelsea.
Colin gives the sign language when he went off.
Yeah, charming.
2-0. So, playing against teams, I'm not sure that I've actually done that. I'm not sure what I have. I've never really looked at it as playing against a manager, but obviously when I went to Tottenham, Keith Birkinshaw was the manager, and Keith Birkinshaw was successful. I mean, the cups that he won, he didn't really do anything for me, Keith, to be quite honest. I look back at it and think, I scored 4 goals in my debut, and Keith wasn't actually at that game. He was away looking at other players to sign, which made no difference, but you know, on the Monday morning when we all got together, it was as if he was trying to keep me down. He didn't know me as a person. And I think he thought I might get carried away with things because I scored 4 goals. But I think if people know me, I'm not that type of person. And he said something to me about, you know, don't get carried away type of thing or blah, blah, blah. And to be honest, it stuck with me and it hurt me a little bit because I thought, well, you don't even know me, you know. And so that's why I didn't mention him in the previous piece in regards to managers. And eventually, obviously, I left Tottenham after a couple of seasons.
Yeah.
Even though they did offer me a 3 or 4 year contract to stay, I'd made my mind up that there was something missing at Tottenham. And I think it was that figure that I needed with me to help me become a better player. You know, the manager, the motivation. And I highly respect Keith Birkinshaw, but he didn't have that type of motivation that suited me, if you like. He didn't have a lot to say other than... And people have this perception that there were... that Tottenham played a certain way and it was more or less on the training field, it was talk to you, the way that they play. Well, that's absolute rubbish.
So 4 goals in the opening match. How many goals did you score for Tottenham in the end of your career there?
Well, I scored quite a few the season I went there. Well, you know, the 4 goals, in theory, got us promotion back into what is now the Premier League, because that was the one season they were out of the Premier League. And I went there and they went up on goal difference.
Oh, right.
So the 9 goals against Bristol Rovers really got Tottenham promoted. So I was there for for a couple of seasons, and I'd had a lot to deal with during that period with losing my father and stuff like that. and I was going through a bit of a deep depression. That's the truth of it all. No one really recognised what had happened, and trying to deal with that yourself was very, very difficult. It was a really difficult period in my life, and it affected my game on the pitch. I ended up floating in and out of the team, but there were reasons for that, and now obviously mental health is a big thing now.
It is.
And at that time, there was just no one to turn to, no one to deal with it, no one to help. And in a funny sort of way, you tend to hide away, and you tend to maybe look at my way was, well, it's not really working out for me here. I'd lost confidence in playing. I lost confidence in myself. And I suppose I looked at it and thought, dealing with this is probably the best for me to move on, which looking back, it might not have been the right decision. But having said that, I've had a fantastic career. I've actually was at Chelsea for nearly 8 years and had a fantastic period at Chelsea. It wasn't great when we first went there, but we turned it around. So going back, my father was ill at that time. We hadn't lost my father at that time. But it was a difficult, very, very difficult period for me. As I say, the choice was made and I signed for Chelsea.
Okay. Let's look at a lighter moment. The only other time you're going to meet a manager is if you've been on, well, especially with you, Dino, a bender at some point.
Oh, dear.
Come on.
I did think we were going to get onto this subject.
Now, come on.
I mean, look, I mean, after stories, I really couldn't tell. Most of the clubs I've been to, and especially in those days, there was a drinking culture. And yeah. It wasn't just, I mean, I know people like Ian Rush and people like, they loved a good drink. And there was nothing wrong with it. I always found that the clubs that I went to that had a good camaraderie. I mean, like I said, Torquay, when I was there, went to Wembley twice. It should never have happened. But we were that type of lads that we were. But I mean, like, probably Wolves and Torquay were the two places where some of the stories that we... I mean, there was me, Matt Elliott and Mark Loram, who went out on a bender one weekend after a game. And Matt had a big gold Cortina and he parked it in Playmore Pool. So we've gone out for two or three days and then we've got to get back in for training. So we've turned up on the morning to go into training. And as we've opened the door, there's a tramp asleep in the back of the car. He said he thought the car had been abandoned. And that was a good one. But I mean, like a Torquay, geez, I mean, it was like a 4 year stag do. I mean, the lads all lived in the same road. They're all single, all young. They just used to, but like I said, Torquay, that they've probably had the most successful period in their history because we went to Wembley twice in 3 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, but I've got to tell you the one story because we was laughing last podcast about the Oracle. Right.
Oh yeah, so, Oracle. Yeah,
here's one. So I'm out in Malta.
Yeah,
and me and John Muir, we're having a night out. We got to meet. There was a Chris Ramsey, who's the QPR lad. There was Dave Bennett, who was the Coventry City lad, you know. And there was a lad called Jason Kabir from Lincoln. So the one night we've said the lads have says we'll meet at the Les Lappin's Hotel. The Les Lappin Hotel, that was what it was called. So me and John have got ready, going down to the Strip in Malta, and. We were asking all the locals, have you heard, in my black country accent, have you heard of the Les Lappin Hotel? And I, no, not heard of that. So we're supposed to meet the lads at about like 7:30, 8:00. And we're walking around for like, we're going, we've had enough of this. No mobile phones in them days.
Yep.
So Les Lappin? No. Les Lappin? No. So all of a sudden we see this girl coming down, an air stewardess, dressed in all her Virgin Atlantic stuff, and we said to the girl, have you ever heard of Les Lappin Hotel? She went, she started laughing and she went, do you mean Le Lapin?
The rabbit.
The rabbit, yeah. The rabbit. That was crazy, that was. But I mean, well, there's other stories. We went out with Glenn Hoddle and Chris Waddle when we Exeter played them.
Oh, yeah.
Went to a local nightclub there and it was just when they were starting to get their single out, Diamond Lights. Remember Diamond Lights?
Yeah.
So we all had a rendition of that and... That was sub night. And then obviously I went out with Gascoigne for the weekend, which was pretty crazy. So we're in an hotel with me, a couple of the Torquay lads who I just mentioned, Chris Evans, the DJ, and we're in the Seaway Hotel in Torquay, and Chris Evans comes in, and he puts $2,000 behind the bar. There's five of us. And he said, I knew it was going to be a bad weekend, because he said to me, he said, when that's gone, I'll give you some more. I'm thinking, five of us to drink £2,000 worth of drink. And he went out on the town that night in just a dressing robe and a pair of hotel slippers. Him and his mate, Will. He used to be part of his, it was his sidekick. And that, now that's where the stories have to end.
Yes, I think
so. Because we can't really divulge any more to that subject.
Shall we end on his near saintly behaviour in football? Because you never went out.
To be honest, I was mostly the driver, the chauffeur.
Yeah.
Because drinking wasn't really... I never used to drink a lot when I was playing. And it just sort of evolved into, I'll be the driver, I'll have a couple of half pints or whatever, and then when you're ready to go, I'll drive you home. That type of thing.
We should have signed you, Carl.
But there is a story where when we got promotion back to the Premier League, Mickey Droy organised for us to go to Brighton Races. And Mick used to own a second-hand car sales showroom in Battersea, around that area. So he got the guy who worked for him, an old chap, to bring a van into Stamford Bridge on whichever day this was, opened the back of the van, and in the back were just crates of beer. So the squad got in the van and off we went to Brighton Races, stopping off at more or less every single pub on the way down. Ended up at Brighton Races. Teresa, who still works at Chelsea now, the secretary girl, had organised for us to go into this VIP type area where there were TVs around by the bar where you could watch the racing going on outside if you preferred not to go outside. And I can, to this day, honestly say that I went to Brighton Races and never saw a horse. So we were in the bar area, time to go, back on the van. Off we went, made our way back to Putney High Street, at the top end of Putney High Street wine bar, having stopped off on a few more pubs on the way back to refuel as such. So in we go. Johnny Bumpstead, who, fantastic lad, Johnny, but loves a night out and still does. So we're in the wine bar, and all of a sudden, a bottle of Black Tower. Do you remember Black Tower?
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But not between us, each.
Oh.
So we're now in the wine bar, walking around with a bottle of wine. And this was early, you know, it was quite early, sort of about 6:30 at night. Mickey Droy's on the phone to Teresa. Teresa, we need to go into the city. We need to go into a nightclub. Leave it with me, I'll sort it out. 20 minutes later, phone call, taxis. We're going into Valbonne in the middle of London. In we go. Go up to the bar. I've actually got the kitty, because probably I was the most sober, as usual.
How dare they drink Black Tower in Chelsea? Black
Tower. Leap from Elch, was it?
Yes,
yeah,
it was.
Yeah. So anyway, order the drinks. Here we go again. Off we go. Start drinking again. No one in there. It's too early, you know. After, like, before 10 o'clock, 12, like 11 o'clock, there's no one in these clubs, you know. So it's getting on a bit now, and another round of drinks, which included champagne and whatever. And then I looked at Dave Speedy, who's one of my big friends, still is, and I said to Speedo, I've had enough of this. and I was really taken back, because, believe me, Speedo can drink, right? And he said, nothing happening. And my Chelsea name was Quincy, because I used to work with the physios and stuff at Chelsea. That's another story. So he said, yeah, Quincy. He said, I've had enough of this as well. And I nearly dropped over, like, because I thought he would be the last one that want to leave, you know. So I said, come on, we'll go. Walking down the street to get a taxi, and there's a guy getting arrested by the police. And Speedo goes, unlucky, mate, all the best tonight. Enjoy yourself in the cell, like that. So this policeman reacted, turned, and I'm now talking to the other police officer who's there, and he, believe me, this police officer said to me, your friend shouldn't have said that. He said, this guy is, like, really, like, one of the guys who will just react to situations. So the next thing I hear is the police officer saying, name. I ain't telling you my name. It's nothing to do with you. So I'm there going, oh no, what's happening now? Next thing, the police wagon comes around. Speedo's getting led into this van. So like an idiot, I tried to open the passenger door. So I'm getting in the passenger door. And the guy said, no, you're not getting in. He said, we're not arresting you. I said, well, what? They'll put me in the back. No, no, we're not arresting you. So I'm going, what do I do now? Speedo's now gone in the police van. So I'm stood in this street where I don't know where I am in the middle of London. So I said to the officer, where's he going? The other one, like. And he said, oh, if you go left here. Anyway, I then find the police station. So I'm sat outside, freezing cold, sat on the step. I couldn't get in. And I saw this van go past, and I thought, I wonder if that's that van. Eventually, I managed to get through these huge doors, go in, and there's like this hatch that you slid up. Another police officer came out, yes, sir, can I help you? And I looked through, and I saw the officer who arrested him, and I said, yeah. I said, he arrested my friend just now. I said, and he didn't do anything. So he said, oh, your name, what was his name? So I gave him that information. The next thing, the officer comes out. He said, Mr. Lee, he said, I would suggest that you go home. He said, because it's taken three officers to get Mr. Speedy into the cell. And now he's running and trying to get out of the cell on his own. And I went, no, that can't be true. And he went, yes. He said, if I was you, I would find your way home. So I went home and I got in. So my wife, sir, and she said, what are you doing? I said, oh, you're not going to believe this. And she went, we sat up and I said, I've got to let Joanne know, Dave's wife at the time. So I thought, I can't tell her. I've got to just say that he stayed at the hotel. So I did. In the morning, Joanne rings me and says, why did you tell me Dave was at the hotel? He's just phoned me from the cell. cutting a long story short, Speedo phones me. I go and pick him up. He goes to court on the Sunday morning or whatever it was. And he was fined. It was either £6 or £8. I saw him a few months ago and I said to him it was £9. He said, no, I think it was £6. He said, but what a stupid situation. He said, because I didn't do anything wrong. And to this day, I swear to God, he never did anything wrong. But that was a night out.
That's a lesson.
It is a lesson. We do not endorse drinking to excess. And the behaviour is a long time ago, yeah?
Well, I mean, you know, you're talking about Chelsea players, right? You can imagine, could that happen today? Never.
No, of course
never
not.
In a million years.
No. Well, I don't know. Jack Grealish gives us a good go, doesn't he?
As I say, we do not endorse drinking to excess. Back on the ball. Brought to you courtesy of Wallen Solicitors and Greenwood Accountants. I'm just off to contact my solicitor after those stories. Speak to you later.